Welcome to the Entrepreneurs Visiting Victor podcast with Victor Dadage, where you'll hear stories and strategies to help increase your sales and grow your business. Here's your host, Victor Dadage.
All right, welcome to Entrepreneurs Visiting Victor. I'm your host, Victor Dadage. I hope you're having an amazing day so far. Today, we have an awesome guest. He is an entrepreneur with 30 years of experience in launching and scaling startup businesses in the ICT sector. He is the CEO and founder of Wonderful, which is a company that provides simple, fast, and secure instant bank payment technology. By leveraging open banking and it's just one fee per transaction, Wonderful payments are much cheaper than debit and credit card processing. He is also a non-executive director at the fundraising regulator, where he contributes to the regulation and promotion of ethical fundraising practices in the United Kingdom. So let's welcome Kieran James. How are you doing today, Kieran?
Very well, Victor. Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, it's great to have you on. Let's get started. I'm going to ask you to please share your story. How did you wind up becoming an entrepreneur?
It's a short question and a long answer, so I hope you and your listeners bear with me. I'll try and try and be brief. But many years ago, my professional life started as a working in a trade association in London in the fashion industry. Did my degree in economics, went there as a first job, did that for a few years, really to pay the rent while I was playing the drums in a band in the evening. Moved from there into high school teaching, and from high school teaching to a training institute in the Middle East. And that's really how I got started on the kind of entrepreneur's route. So one of the things I was tasked with in this training institute was coming up with some marketing materials. And this would have been 1998. And they asked me, I think, to put together a PDF document to say how amazing the training institute was. And it struck me that it was a great time to be starting to explore the internet. So that was my first venture into doing anything on my own. Kind of once that training institute job ended, I went back to the UK from the Middle East and decided to set up a web design business. I think, as I often comment, probably me and the rest of the world in 1998 had that idea. But yeah, that's how I got started in running my own thing.
Okay, so basically you were in a trade association, you did high school teaching, drums, and then later on you got a degree in economics and you went to a training institute. Later you were sent there in the Middle East and you asked to write up some training stuff. You did a PDF, and then after that job was finished, went back to UK, you decided open up your own web design company, and you never looked back. And that was really around the time, like you said, the internet was really getting underway. People were really getting into it, and things just exploded. And I'm sure that must have been a very exciting time, because that was the very beginning of everything. You know, now there's like tons of people, you know, offering web design services and stuff like that. But back then, you were probably one of the very few. So it must have been very interesting. Can you talk a little bit more about that experience?
Absolutely. It was interesting as well, because Google was pretty nascent at the time too. And a story I often like to tell is it's a lot harder these days to get yourself visible on Google search results. But back then, running a web design business, I actually used the term web design in white text on a white background several times on my homepage, and ended up for probably about 48 hours being number one on Google, which was amazing. And to think how simple it was back then, but clearly a lot more challenging these days. Yes, so things have moved on a lot. But I think one of the things that struck me very early on, even in that role, was that I probably didn't want to be doing the kind of work that involved. And by that, what I mean is it was quite a long process from getting a gig to getting paid in web design, and probably still is. Because there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing, you know, clarification about the brief and what's required. And then even when you feel like you've met the brief, there'll be some more further dialogue about, well, can you move this here, or can you change the color of that, or can we have this page that we didn't specify here? So it struck me, you know, then as a one-man band operating, that was quite, I guess, not problematic's probably been too harsh, but it was a surprise just how intense that could be. And that really prompted the first move into what I would call kind of mass market digital services and products. So at that time, one of the things that I was doing as part of my web design job was registering domain names for all of the clients that we were signing up. And that was the next thing that I really got involved with, was doing domain name registration for a company called domainnames.com. who was subsequently acquired by VeriSign. So we really kind of work hard on automating that process and making it very simple for people to register a domain name. We did all of the ongoing registration with whichever registrar it was. So as well as doing the .com.net and .org domain names, we were doing all the country domain names as well. And the process was to make that very simple for the user. But from our point of view, it became highly automated. And that struck me as a really good route into kind of removing all of that tension between customer and client and just making a process that they basically fulfill themselves. We make that really easy for them to do so, but then it becomes like a machine essentially. And I think that's been a trait for all of the businesses that I've been involved in since. So at the same time as we were doing the domain names, we were also doing company incorporations online. So we moved another business from being a very paper-based and very postal service-based operation to again being an online. I think it was the first, we believe, the first online company formation agent probably in the world back in 1999. And again, same kind of principle. Can we simplify this process, gather all of the information on a web form? It was one web form back then. None of these save it until later and come back and complete it at your leisure. You either did it in one sitting or you lost all the data. But still a much simpler process than the post. So I think, again, that's been a key driver through all of the various businesses. Can we automate? Can we simplify? Can we make it easy to find and easy to use?
I got it. Thanks for sharing that. So basically, like you said, Google was very nascent. You were able to get on page one at the very top. It was much easier 25 years ago. But you said it was also an exhaustive process, just getting the process done to eventually getting paid. It was very intense. And the customer was always asking for more things. Oh, can you change this? Can you change that? And I think that one aspect, things haven't changed like with clients. They're all the same. They always want something. It was like, oh, just even though you did everything they asked, they said, but I also want this and this and this. So yeah, so some things don't change. But then you went on to focusing your company on mass marketing, digital services. You did web domain registration for clients. You got domain names for them, and you also started doing company corporations online. And basically, one of the things you realized the importance of for clients was to try to automate things as much as possible, getting away from paper. The less the client has to do, the happier they are with you. So if you can make things less manual and you can save them a lot of time and trouble, you're going to make them much happier. So, and just simplifying the process is so huge to clients. They just people are willing to pay. Think about it this way: anyone can slice an apple, but you buy sliced apples, people are willing to pay more than just buy the apple, even though anyone can slice it, because they just don't want to spend the time to slice that apple. So same thing with online processes. If you could just do it for them, people are willing to pay for that services, so they don't have to spend time. They just want to focus on the things that they consider important. So and talk a little bit more, because because my experience is that customer service is extremely important. I think one of the things a lot of companies mess up on is they don't put up enough of a premium on customer service. They don't appreciate them, and as a result, they often lose the potential for a lot of, number one, repeat businesses, and also word of mouth advertising that they could give to their friends because of the great service that you give. So could you talk a little bit more about the importance of that?
Of course, absolutely. But I think going back to your point about the sliced apples, I think it's a really great analogy. We've really targeted and focused a lot on small businesses, and we all know that small businesses tend to be pretty time poor. They've got plenty on their plate, small business owners. So a lot of the process has been around that. It's how can we simplify whatever other functions they need to do to operate their business. How can we help them do that? How can we help them manage that? So I say we started with the domain name registration, company formations. Let's make the process of actually creating your business as easy as possible. Let's try and make the process of putting it online as easy as possible. But then we took that to lots of other applications, the first in telecoms, which was the same principle. So going back now to probably 2005, and we had in the UK, I'm sure you have similar things in the States and elsewhere in the world, but we had number rangers, which were called non-geographic number rangers. So rather than a local area code, you've got a number that you can dial from anywhere in the UK to anywhere in the UK, but it's not a geographic number. Now, without getting too technical, one of the beauties of those number ranges is that we could apply lots and lots of different functionality to those numbers. So we could have that number be dialed and it would send a voicemail via email, or it would transmit a fax, or it would send a call to different sets of numbers, a hunt group, as we call it. Or we could say between 9 and 5, we want it to phone this number, and then in the evening, we want it to go to another number. And then when it gets to 11 p.m., it must always go to voicemail. So that kind of functionality, very, very appealing for a small business owner, even more so if you can manage all of that through a simple web interface. So again, this was one of those ideas about how do we make this easy for people to find strong search engine optimization on those key terms. In the UK, it might be I'm looking for an 0800 number, or it might be I'm looking for voice to email. So it could be the service or it could be the number. Once they'd found that, we made the process for registration quite straightforward. We made the number management really easy. And tying that all back into the customer service point of view, our principle is that in an ideal world, you don't have to call us. Because actually, you can manage the whole thing yourself. You don't need to email us. It's actually all pretty intuitive. And I think it's Steve Jobs who famously didn't want any instruction manuals going out with anything he ever sold, because his philosophy is you pick it up and use it. You shouldn't need to ever refer to a manual. So we tried to make that our guiding principle. You can't always do it, but if you can, that's great. But then if people do need to contact you, just make it easy for them to do so, because that's the place, if any, that you want to scale quite quickly. For me, a great indication of success is actually having to scale up your customer service department, because it means you're doing well. Unless, I guess the reverse can be true, that if you're doing so badly that everyone's calling you all the time because your product doesn't work, then that's probably a bad indicator. But typically, what we're hoping for is people are, just have a quick question that you want answering and they're off the phone and we deal with those promptly.
I
But we've
got it.
also always had the principle, Victor, that we really want to make it as easy for someone to leave the business as it is for them to join. So that whole cradle to grave philosophy has been super important, from finding us to registering to using the service to actually, it's time for me to move on and find a different provider for whatever reason. We would never inhibit anybody from doing that because we want to leave them with a good recollection of working with us as a business. And in telecommunications, sadly, that's often not a thing. You'll phone to cancel a service and you'll be on the phone for half an hour with someone trying to get you to stay with them. And for me, that's just always been a no-no.
And you're right about that last point. Some of them, you're like, they will do anything they can to kill you. Say you forget to cancel, and then you're on the phone. You have to do numerous phone calls. Well, a lot of times, they won't let you cancel online. You have to call them because then they're trying to convince you to stay. And I'll be honest, I
Exactly.
never liked that. It's just I always respected the companies. They allow me to cancel my account online. I respect because you never know. Maybe I go back down the road.
Exactly.
But I have to call them. That leaves a bad feeling in my mouth, and it makes me not want to go back to them because they're trying very hard. Some of them don't. They'll let me go, but sometimes I'm on for like 10 minutes. I'm like, I just want to cancel. Just
Yeah.
cancel the account, and they're like, yeah. So, and I won't give any names, but I'm sure anyone listening to this interview has experienced what we were talking about.
Absolutely.
No, but I
Absolutely.
like that. Just make everything the registration management straightforward. You want them to be able to contact you as little as possible. Everything should be straightforward, easy to understand, to figure out, and only they should only be calling you basically if they have a quick question. And you're not expecting calls which last 30 to minutes to an hour because they have so many different problems. Those things are far and few between. So because you mentioned CJ, you don't want these manuals. You wanted to make it simple, so they don't need to use these manuals. So I like that. I don't like when I order something and I gotta spend like an hour trying to figure out what the hell I did, to turn this on. It's when it's
Awful.
something so easy to turn on, I could do it in 30 seconds. Oh, that makes me so happy. So
Yeah.
I like that simplification. And so talk a little bit more about what are some of the other things like, so you've been doing this for like now, close to, you've been an entrepreneur for almost 30 years now. And what are some of the other things that you think that separate you? Because you mentioned some really good things now. What are some of the things that you think that's helped you become successful over the years that maybe some of these other companies are missing out on?
I think one of the things is being patient when you start a business. It's very often you're expecting everybody to immediately get your idea because you do, because you've got that passion and belief. And I think a lot of good businesses are founded on that. So it'll often be something that the owner, the founder of the business, has done because they have an interest or a passion for the thing that they're about to start selling. And that's a great thing. I think it's great to have that passion and belief, but sometimes it can be misdirected. So, you've always got to be aware that because you think, let me give you an analogy. So I enjoy doing yoga. Imagine I have this great idea for a yoga mat because the one that I've been using slips around the floor. And I think here's a yoga mat that doesn't slip and it's fantastic. And I'm going to take this analogy to a stupid level just to give you a sense. So my business idea is I'm going to have a mat that I can staple to the carpet. And I'm going to sell these special yoga staplers that staple my mat to the floor. So I do that and I put them online and no one's interested. Surprise, surprise, because we're all looking out thinking, what an insane idea. But all I'm saying is that your misdirection because of a problem that you solve might not be a problem that everyone else has. So I think one of the things that is important is recognizing sometimes that you might have to either pivot and change and be willing to do so. Or in some cases, you've just plain and simple got it wrong and, recognize when it's time to move on and actually that isn't the greatest idea. Let's do something different. So I think, a little humility is always super valuable. Going alongside that passion and belief, because I think that's what drives the tenacity. And I think that's really important as well. Without that, you'll probably struggle. I was chatting to someone a little while ago and they're saying, I'm really interested in getting involved in business, but I've not got anything that I'm particularly passionate about. So I'm thinking I might just buy a business and come in and run it. And I know everyone's different, but I looked at that and thought, I can't see how I would do that. Personally, I just can't see how I would get the energy and the fire in the belly to do that, to come in and run a business that I got no interest in what they were selling. It seems an odd one. So, in answer to your question, I think patience is important. Give it a bit of time, but then reflect. If it isn't happening, then be ready to change, to pivot, to essentially close if it's not working, and move your energy into something else. And we've done that a number of times over the years. It can look like a lot of businesses and a few exits, but there have been certainly some failures along the way as well.
Yeah, and everyone goes through certain failures. You're not going to meet too many entrepreneurs. Like, everything I did worked out well. I did everything correct. Everyone makes mistakes. There's things, but they pivot. They made the adjustments. They got the feedback. So either they figure out, okay, I need to make this better. I got to change this. I got to stop doing that. I got to do this instead. Everyone's gone through that. It's impossible not to make any mistakes. And you mentioned something about be patient starting off. A lot of people are not, and then after a while, I think they just give up. Whereas, like, if they made some change, they pivoted, things could have changed. But also, you brought up the example of the yoga stables. Like, just because you like something, you think it's great for you, doesn't necessarily mean that other people are gonna like it. Sometimes you have to make adjusted pivot, or maybe just say move on. Maybe this thing doesn't work. I got to try something else. And unfortunately, some you're right. You mentioned we fall in love with something, we think everyone else is gonna love it, and that sometimes is not the case. Just
Absolutely.
because just because we like something doesn't mean something someone else is gonna like it. Conversely, sometimes we're like, why people buy these things? But there are things I don't understand, but people like buying it. But that's the way they are. They prefer, they just love buying it. So not necessarily what I like or dislike is what other people like or dislike. So sometimes you got to look at the trend and say, hey, this is what people are interested in, so maybe I should be selling this. And
I mean, the yoga stapler, which literally just popped into my head as we were talking there. I mean, clearly it's a stupid product, but you can see the problem exists. It's someone coming to you and saying, yeah, my mat slips around, but there's probably a better solution to that problem. Let's figure out what it is. And then you've got a product. The one you've come up with first time around is wrong. And it's that, I guess, it's that ability to go, yeah, but that was my idea. So I'm sticking with it. It's going to work. And actually going, no, there is a problem. We can solve it, but it's a different solution we need to look for.
no, definitely. Now, did mentors play any part in your success in the entrepreneurial journey?
Mentors.
Yeah, mentors.
Yeah, I would say so. Not in a formal capacity, but certainly one of the guys that I've been working with, I consider a mentor because we've co-founded businesses over the years since those very early days. So I mentioned the web design. The domain name business that I got into was that, he ran the operation selling our web design business domain names. And we just got chatting, and he said, "You know what? We're looking at international expansion. We'd love you to go and run our South American operation. Why don't we buy your web design business and then you come join us?" And I regard that guy as a mentor because we've worked so closely together for now 25, 30 years. Also, what we think both recognize in each other is that we've got very, very different skill sets. So, you know, I'm definitely more on the kind of biz dev marketing, you know, that kind of side of the business. He's been CFO, he's currently CFO in our business today, but he's very much on that financial set side of the business, and it's an area where I don't consider myself to be particularly strong. So again, it's just finding areas where you can gel, work together.
Well, that makes sense. Thanks for sharing that. So that guy's been a big influence. You guys worked together 25, 30 years, and he's good at things that you're not so good at, and vice versa. And that's good. And that's something very important. Sometimes people think like they have to know everything. You don't. You have to know certain, maybe a little bit of knowledge in that certain field, but it's very. I think it's more important to focus on the things you're good at, and then find other people who can do the things you're not good at. Don't try to always focus so much on your weaknesses. Focus more on the strengths and delegate it to other people. Would you agree?
I would agree. And you know, Victor, I was reminded of that by a new employee I had recently. And it was great. It was such a refreshing thing. It was just a few words that were said to me. But I was feeling embarrassed because it was a financial question that was asked by our new head of finance. And I didn't know the answer. I didn't have it at my fingertips. And I went, "I'm really sorry, I don't know the answer to that." And she went, "Kieran, that's what you pay me for." And it was just that moment of going, "You know what? You're right. It is what I pay you for. Why am I so embarrassed about this? It's absolutely fine." But it is. You sometimes need reminding. You don't need to do everything. But there's sometimes you give yourself that expectation that you have to.
Exactly. And that was a good reminder you just shared with us. Absolutely. Now, you run a company whose name I really like. It's called Wonderful. Would you like to talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely. And this for me is, I guess, where it gets a little bit interesting. I hope so. Hope I haven't bored your listeners so far. But yeah, so back in 2016, we were having one of those years where there were a few family events. So it was my 50th birthday. It was my wife and my 25th wedding anniversary. And we had two of the kids had significant birthdays that year. So in the run up to 2016, we were thinking, let's do some stuff during 2016 that's kind of meaningful and mark the year. And I decided, having been a runner for a few years, or quite a few years really, I was going to do the New York Marathon for a charity. So during the end of 2015, we had this idea that not only would I run the marathon, but we'd actually build the fundraising platform that was going to collect all of the donations and give them to the charity. Kind of a bit harebrained, but I had some great engineers in a telecoms business that I was running at the time. So I sat them down and said, "Lunch breaks, you know, your coffee breaks, weekends, do you fancy giving up a bit of time and let's see whether we can build this platform?" And our motivation for doing that was that the existing platform, there's a dominant provider in the UK, was a for-profit business, and quite a chunk of donations that were being made through the platform, one way or another, were getting lost en route, whether that's in platform fees, whether it was card processing charges, whether it was deductions from gift aid, which is a tax relief that's really aimed at charities. But somewhere along the way, money was getting lost. And I just thought, can we build something as a proof of concept where we get this funded through a corporate sponsor that picks up all the costs of running the platform and all of the money goes to charity? And what we did was we undertook to be that corporate sponsor in the first instance as the telecoms business, my small business. And we said the first £1 million that goes through the platform will cover any costs associated with donating that money. And that sounds like a lot of money, but the real hard cost of that £1 million going through the platform was actually card processing fees. So the fees to get the money from a debit card user, from the donor, into the charity's account via our fundraising platform was the big cost of doing that. Long story short, we had a lot of success. It took a little bit of time, you know, talking about the patients, but initially the charities we were trying to onboard to this platform were very nervous and they thought we were up to no good and were we going to steal donor data or what was it that you were trying to provide? They couldn't understand that it was 100% philanthropic. But after a while, they started to come on in fairly big numbers. And what happened then was we ran into what we describe now as that success paradox. So suddenly we're seeing lots of donations going through the platform, and clearly there's a linear relationship between all those donations that are processing and the cost of processing them. So if effectively all the money that's going to our card processing provider. That became too big for us as a small telecoms business. We got a high street bank involved to be our corporate sponsor, ultimately became too big for them. So at that point, we kind of reflected and we thought we've got to find a solution to this problem of moving money, this cost of moving money. And that's what we have today. So our current business now is an open banking payments provider. It provides that service completely free of charge to the fundraising platform. We no longer need a corporate sponsor because open banking has brought down the cost of payment processing by at least 90%, probably more. And we are now offering that service of processing transactions online and offline, to commercial entities as well. So, you know, for that reason, we're really pleased we're called Wonderful. We think the service is wonderful. And we're just in that phase, you know, of startup now with the commercial service. We've been operating the charity donations for a couple of years. Well, with the card processing since 2016, but using open banking for a couple of years now.
Okay, so that's good. It's knowing that the donations are getting there, they're not being lost. And I think sometimes the people, you know, sending their donations, they're always wondering how much of the money is getting through. Are they really getting money? Is it getting lost? Are people taking it? So I think that, you know, something like this is really reassuring. And you mentioned it's decreased over 90% how much the payment processing is, which is huge because those payment processes can be a lot of money. So I'm sure, like a lot of charities that are using this, they must be extremely happy because the donations are getting through, people are losing it, the costs are going down, and it just seems like a win for everyone on all sides. So I think you aptly named the company Wonderful because it's doing some really wonderful things. So I'm sure it must give you a great feeling you're making such a big difference here.
It is really nice to finish the day thinking, you know, we're driving down the cost for our commercial customers, but it's that genuine win-win-win-win. You know, everybody's benefiting from this. The more transactions that go through on that commercial side, already saving the commercial client so much money, are enabling all of these charities, donors, and fundraisers to generate even more for good causes. So it feels like, yeah, it's been an opportunity through this technological breakthrough that is open banking. Now, this didn't exist a few years ago. This is a brand new way of moving cash. We're able to create and expand that virtuous circle, and that feels fantastic. You know, when we set up the fundraising platform in 2016, we were inspired by the amazing work that volunteers in the charity sector are doing every day, that the people who are running marathons or jumping out of airplanes or, you know, baking, whatever it might be, that they're giving the time, effort, for such great causes. And then you've got the generosity of the donors as well. So it felt to us like there was a space for the platform sitting in the middle of those three groups of people to do something wonderful too. But to be able to then extend that virtuous circle even further feels really, really, really great.
No, absolutely. Yeah, everyone's happy on all sides. It's making a big difference in everyone's lives, and it's just a great thing to do. And like you said, I think as especially the open banking part is like it's been more recent, the last 2 or 3 years. I just think as people learn more about it, I'm sure you're going to see a lot more of these charities and other companies start using it because like you said, everyone wins. Things are not getting lost, and they're saving a lot of money on processing fees. So, like, you know, it's like you said, it's a great feeling. You're happy. Everyone's happy because everyone is winning in this. And those are the best kind of transactions when everyone wins. No one feels like, you know, someone took something from them. You know, they cheated on something. When everyone gets something out of it, it's the best of it's the best thing out there. I totally agree,
Definitely.
and it just feels so, yeah.
I think our view is, you know, it's okay. It's fine. There is not really this tension between doing good and doing well in that sense that we can have a commercial operation that can be successful because the pricing is transparent, it's predictable, it's fair. And if there's still enough left in that to support good work of the charities, fantastic. And that's what we're really keen to do. For us, the fact that we got started doing that has always been really important. It's, you know, sometimes you see we had a couple of fundraising platforms in the UK that were they were fantastic. They were brilliant. They were both operated as non-profits, but they were run by very large corporations. And it felt, in some ways that was a good way of kind of promoting the brand of the commercial organizations. That's not to negate the amazing work they did in any way. It was really, really great. But I think it feels even better to have come at this the other way around, to have solved a problem in the charity sector that then we can extend to the commercial sector, rather than kind of creating a brand to sit on top of something.
Exactly. Solve the problem in the charity sector and then extend it to the service sector and other sectors. And like you said, people don't, some people don't understand this. Being nice, being ethical, helping people, solving their problems, trying to do what's best for them is the best kind of business because you know what? People are happier. People tell their friends, and you get a really good reputation. When you do something unethical, if you try to rip them off, you may get away with it for a short period of time, but eventually word gets out. In this day and age of the internet, one person angry, they tell all their friends, they tell all their friends, and after a while, you just have to use a terrible reputation. When you have this terrible reputation, it is really hard to get it back because once people lose that trust, you no one's worried. When we have that trust, everyone believes you, and they say this person is an unethical person. They want to help me, they have my best interest at heart. Everyone's much more open to want to work with you because they hear all the stories about how you've helped all these other people and they're going to trust you more. Everything comes down to trust. If they trust you, they're going to want to work. If they don't trust you, I don't care how good your product is, they will not want to work with you. So I think something, I think that's a good reminder, I think, for everyone listening. Work on that trust. You do not want to lose it.
100%. Yeah. I mean, and you know, authenticity is a word that's used a lot now, but having that authenticity, stand behind what you're saying as a business, believe in what you're saying as a business, and ultimately try and, you know, look for things that are probably bigger than just that commercial profit driver, because there are opportunities. You have a platform, you've got a voice, you've got resource, you can do good things with that.
Awesome. Now, so coming toward the end of our interview, are there any last minute pieces of advice you'd like to leave for our audience?
I think, you know, finally, just really recapping on what I said before, have that belief. If you've got a passion for something and you think you've got a commercial opportunity, you know, seize the day. It sounds like a terrible cliche, but often people are just a bit nervous about making that first step. And that belief and passion can take you a long, long way, you know, just that, because that's what's giving you conviction to start the day every day and keep going with it. So, yeah, I think, you know, self-belief, I think authenticity will be the other one, just kind of really. If you're going to say something, make sure you believe it first, because if you don't, then your customers won't, your employees won't, no one will. So that's really critical too.
I love that. Have that passion, desire, self-belief, and be authentic. I couldn't agree with you more. I love that. Listen, Karen, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. It was a pleasure having you on. You shared a lot of great advice, a lot of great tips, and I know the people listening learned a lot from all the things you had to share. And if people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way for them to contact you?
Very straightforward. Go back to those domain name registration days. Wonderful.co.uk for the payments business, wonderful.org for the charity fundraising website. Couldn't be simpler. And if you've got any remote interest whatsoever, my blog is at kieran.net.
That's wonderful. Thanks so much. Have yourself a great day, Karen.
You too. Thanks, Victor. Pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to the podcast. If you've enjoyed listening, please smash that subscribe button so you don't miss any of our amazing episodes. Please also leave a 5-star rating review and have an awesome day.